This is the Anderson Files on PodClip. The Anderson Files is a look at commerce, investment, economics, and retirement issues that affect each and every one of you. Your host is Mike Anderson, Executive Vice President, Retirement Services, and partner of Finestone Partners. Finestone Partners is an independent firm with securities offered through Four Point Capital. And now your host, Mike Anderson. Well, this is the Anderson Files. I'm Mark Allen. I'm going to step in and talk to Mike Anderson. With his 30-plus years in the financial services industry, we thought it would be good for him to update us on the economy, on jobs, on benefits, on COVID, on the GDP and company earnings. I mean, there's so much that we can cover here, and we'll try to get as much in. Mike, thanks for asking me to step in. It's kind of fun to do this, and I appreciate it. Let's talk about the drop in the market. It's been consistent as we record this just before the 31st of October. That week, I can't remember exactly. I know that there was, on one day, there was 300, the next day was 400, then 900. Is this something that's worrisome, and should the average investor pull out?
Well, the average investor should certainly be aware, but not necessarily pull out. We've had, over the last 5 days, the S&P 500 is down a little bit less than 5% up through today. We're seeing a little bounce up today, which is October 29th. So the market really hasn't moved that much over the last 3 to 5 days, down a little less than 5. Over the last 30 days, market's up about a little over 1%. So overall, not much movement. And the last couple months, stocks, U.S. stocks have remained kind of range bound. And year to date, the S&P 500 is up less than 2 points, but it is positive. As you know, we had, with the onset of the pandemic, we had the big drop, a historic drop in March, and subsequently the market has recovered to where overall the S&P is positive for the year. What has not occurred is the overall market, including small and mid-cap stocks, are still negative for the year. So small and mid-cap stocks for the year are down about 7% year-to-date, but the S&P is slightly up. So a lot of volatility this year in the year of pandemic, but overall, if you net everything out, things haven't been too bad.
How does the stock market affect the general economy, not only in this country, but worldwide?
Mark, with that, as you know, the stock market is equity, is ownership in a company. And in the U.S., stocks are widely held by the public through 401k plans, individual accounts, IRAs, family trusts. And when the market is down, it reflects the U.S. economy. It reflects the world economy. And with the U.S. and China going neck and neck as to what is the largest economy, when the U.S. sneezes and the market sneezes, it sends a ripple effect from New York to Tokyo to the Middle East to London and back to New York. So it's definitely felt. And that's why, when we see this volatility periodically in a time that is precarious in the time of COVID, it just adds that much more to it. And, you know, with that, with the pandemic and kind of a staggered recovery of getting it under control, granted, we don't have a vaccine, and there may be more lockdowns this morning out of Europe. Germany's considering some further lockdowns, as is France, and that affects the economy. And it's interesting how North America's GDP and Europe's GDP have been affected by COVID with different approaches to lockdowns. Overall, year to date, the US economy is down about 4.5% GDP, and Europe is down about 8%. So US is doing a little bit better, considerably better. And this morning we had a report that third quarter growth was up 33%. So we are seeing a rebound from the second quarter and the first quarter.
And the term, the butterfly effect. So what happens here in the US does affect the world economy.
The pace is typically set in New York. And when New York closes at 4 p.m. Eastern, Asia picks up. And then from there, the Middle East, then Europe. And then when New York opens, Europe is just about done for the day. But there is that ripple effect through the trading around the world in a given business day.
Well, with the economy, people need to buy stuff. But if they don't have jobs, they don't buy. So let's take a look at the job situation. Where is it? Is it improving?
On the jobs, things are improving. And obviously in March and coming out of March, layoffs, furloughs, most of it did occur, and it impacted small and mid-sized companies, small business, most affected. And, you know, the things that we see occurring, restaurants, retail stores, as we know, it's been dramatically affected. And now we're coming up to winter. So, for example, here in Southern California, outdoor dining, which is permitted, well, even in California, it gets a little cold. You know, I know the East is saying you don't know what cold is, and we really don't. But it still gets cold. But small, mid-sized business being affected the most. We are seeing a reduction in the unemployment levels, which were above, as far as the filing for unemployment, above 20%. And now, overall, we're down to about 10%. And just this morning, it was released for new jobs claims actually dropped again. So slowly coming back, slowly, step by step.
We're going to talk about jobs and the kinds of jobs that are available right now. This is the Anderson Files on podclips.io. I'm Mark Allen, sitting in for Mike Anderson, who is in the guest seat, and our producer today is Daryl Wayne. Mike, let's talk about the kinds of jobs that are there. Are they jobs that people can actually live on, have the American dream, you know, maybe have a home, put their kids through college, or are they kind of lower paying jobs?
Yeah, most of the jobs that have been lost and are recovering have been in the retail sector. These are lower paying jobs, service industry jobs, and which could come back if those businesses reopen. Now, we've had three stimulus packages so far. We have a fourth, but it hasn't come to fruition yet. But the three that were passed, as we know, part of it, it produced stimulus checks directly to individuals. And that was part of the reason why we saw a rebound in spending, a pretty dramatic rebound in growth the third quarter of this year. So we saw stimulus being applied in the first and second quarter. We saw the positive effect of it in the third quarter. But what's happening is a lot of the sugar high of that stimulus is now starting to wear off unless we get a fourth stimulus. And with a fourth stimulus, it will definitely aid and assist in small business surviving. being able to navigate their way through until the economy is fully opened.
As a financial consultant, as somebody who studies the markets, the economy, jobs, the benefits, all of this, are you in favor of that fourth stimulus package?
Actually, I am. And the main reason is because we are in such unprecedented situation. You know, as we know, historically, the last pandemic of this scale was the Spanish flu at the end of World War I, 1918 to 1920. You know, it's been a while. It's been a while. And that was a devastating, coming off of a world war and then having that happen. So because it's so unprecedented and it affects everyone, it has shown its benefit to aid the economy, jobs, growth, spending, as we work our way through and then eventually coming, you know, out of this. What has also been of great benefit, I think, has been the Federal Reserve providing large amounts of inexpensive money into the U.S. banking system, and also the Fed making very specific announcements that they're not going to be raising interest rates. So these are, you know, having to worry about interest rates going up during a pandemic, it's one more thing off the table. We have enough to worry about, but they have specifically said, yeah, we're not going to be raising rates, and that's one thing that is not have working against us.
And what about inflation, the other I word? Interest rates and inflation, they sometimes go hand in hand. Are they linked? Do we have to worry about inflation and having to buy bread at $35 a loaf?
Well, it's going to be quite a while until that may happen. But between inflation and deflation, we've got a situation where the Federal Reserve, to a certain degree, is more concerned about deflation with the pandemic, a slow economy, and a slightly growing and improving economy lends to more demand, lends to prices going up incrementally, and actually a little inflation is actually good. It's showing that the economy is growing. It's when it gets to hyperinflation, and that's when the Fed has to think about potentially raising rates.
Mike, give us an idea of what deflation is. I mean, as you were describing it, I'm thinking, you know, my prices are going to go down. Labor costs are going to go down because my hourly rate will go down. Am I incorrect in that?
That's basically the fundamentals. What's occurring in a deflation environment, prices are coming down, demand by consumers is coming down, and there's less economic activity. There's less demand for loans, less demand for goods and services. So, and in turn, earnings on companies typically overall will go down because there's less economic activity occurring, and interest rates come down. It's interesting what's happened. It hasn't happened here in the U.S., but in Germany and Japan, their deflation has gone to the extent of where interest rates have gone negative. Negative. Yes. And that means, Mark Allen, you go put money into a CD at Chase and or at a bank, and you have to pay them to hold that deposit.
At that point, holding your money in a mattress like Daryl does anyway is what we should do.
That would be the more advantageous move. As long as it was safe and nobody knows that that's being done, having that cash in the mattress is a better move than putting it into a bank, because you're paying bank basically to safekeep the dollars. It's a sign that the economy is slow, demand is slow.
This is the Anderson Files on podclips.io. I'm Mark Allen, sitting in for our guest, who is the actual host of the Anderson Files, Mike Anderson. Let's talk about how some of the big companies are confident that everything's going to change. There was a major computer manufacturer this week that bought another company and spent $35 billion. Are companies doing that? Is this a good time for them to do that? And will that make their stock prices go up because they anticipate a demand for a special service or product?
Well, over the last couple of months, including this week, there have been a number of major mergers. And the message is that companies are confident enough to go ahead with these mergers, that the economy and the forecast is solid enough to commit, because they could just as easily say no and wait 3, 6, 9, 12 months to then do a merger. What's also interesting is we've had several major, huge initial public offerings just within the last few weeks. And again, there's enough confidence to be able to launch a sale of shares into these new companies that there's confidence that there's going to be buyers for those shares and that those companies will be welcomed into the marketplace, and they have been. So the silver lining is, even though the here and now may not look that great, the anticipation 3 months from now, 6 months from now, that things are most likely going to be better. There's going to be more economic growth, activity, spending, borrowing, which in turn will aid in improving earnings on companies, which will continue to move the market up. So it's a vote of confidence.
Going back 100 years to 1918, 1920, just after World War I and that pandemic, do you know if the world economy was crushed like it has been with COVID? And what did they do about it at that time?
Great question. While I wasn't there myself, and Mark, I know you weren't there either.
No, neither was Daryl.
Neither was Daryl. But having studied that period, coming off of World War I in 1918, then the Spanish flu hit, which lasted 2-3 years, global, affected the world. The world went into a global depression, and it was not as bad as what began in 1929, but it did occur. So in the United States, Europe, there was a depression that lasted a couple of years, and then the rebound of that into 1923, 1924, up to 1929, that is what history now knows as the Roaring Twenties. Before that, a world war, a Spanish flu pandemic, and a depression. So there was a lot of hurt that was going on many levels, and then the rebound about 1923 And that is what became the Roaring Twenties. And it was no wonder people were dancing in bars and drinking at will. So it's no wonder.
It may be fortuitous because I believe the stock market crashed on October 29th, 1929. Wasn't that the date?
You know, I'm not certain, but so far today in New York trading, the market's up, so we at least we won't repeat it on the day.
In looking at that financial catastrophe where people were selling pencils for pennies, apples, do you think that it can be that devastating today? Should we have that kind of a depression?
Yeah, great question. We think that that is not going to occur for a couple reasons. When we became affected by the pandemic, which hit the markets in March of this year, 2020, leading up to that, we came off of we were in a very strong economy. 2019, first couple months of 2020, very strong. So, you know, unfortunately, we went into this to begin with, but we went into it very strong. We didn't go into it weak. So, and we feel that repeating March of 2020 is in the rearview mirror. We don't see that happening, repeating itself, that record-setting month repeating itself in the near or midterm. We do see the economy recovering smartly. It may be a little slow and staggered, but recovering as the pandemic slowly comes under control, whether we find a vaccine or not, but better with better therapeutics and following protocol. And we do see recovery happening and happening on a sustained level. On the big picture, and the big picture, I mean an arc of 15 plus years, we feel that we're still in a secular bull market that started around March of 2009. So, you know, we're about 11 years into a secular bull market, and these types of markets last typically at least 15 years and maybe even 20. So volatility along the way, and going into the future, we see an improved market and continued growth.
In our remaining couple of moments, I just want to ask about lockdowns. They've tried these in Europe, and they've also done the opposite, herd immunity. How do each, very quickly, do you think they'll affect the economy? We open up everything, and we know people are going to die. We know people are going to get sick. We know it's going to impact the healthcare system. That's one way. The other is lock us all up and see what happens that way. Will either one of those affect the economy?
Yes, the approach to the pandemic, lockdowns, semi-lockdowns, reopening the economy, will definitely have effect on growth. So far, here in the U.S., our year-to-date, our overall growth is down about 4.5% compared to last year. Europe is down about 8%. In comparison, Europe has had more sustained total lockdowns than the US, and you can see the effect on growth between Europe and the US. So it does, granted, you know, first and foremost, as we know, keeping people safe, those that get sick, having them treated effectively, protecting those that are most vulnerable is a priority no matter where you are in the world. And but when you look at, you know, total shutdown or sustained longer shutdown as opposed to semi-shutdown, just sharing the numbers between Europe and North America, it has affected economic growth. And we can see in those numbers.
Mike, we're out of time. I'm not going to close the show. I'm going to ask you to close the show because it's yours.
I want to thank Daryl Wayne, engineer, Mark Allen, who is guest host and producer. I'm Mike Anderson, and you're listening to The Anderson Files on podclips.io. Keep calm and keep listening.
You've been listening to The Anderson Files with Mike Anderson. Visit us at podclip.io and check on the financial box for more information on The Anderson Files.